experience.
Batman experience.
Batman experience. Batman experience. Experience.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Experience, presented by DraftKings. Two DraftKings shows this week, minier versions of the two. So if you're looking for the games on the Sunday slate, different show. So just go to me, Mayo Media Network, subscribe, obviously, and just find it up there too. It'll come out after the Saturday slate, which we're talking about today. Only doing this and not doing the combined slate because both Millionaire Maker slates are the single day slates. There are a Saturday Sunday contest. If you want full details on those, picks, write-ups, optimizer, ftndaily.com. Super cheap right now with only the playoffs left to go in the NFL season. Use code Mayo. Make that even cheaper on yourself. So go check that out at ftndaily.com. And as always, smash like button to the video in the comment section. Give me your favorite single sleeper play, cheap play on the Saturday slate this week. The three-game slate, which we're going to be talking about with Jake Seeley from TheAthletic.com. My man, are you pumped for playoff football? I love six playoff games. It's great. My wife hates it. I love it.
I love it. I am actually having a great day. I know you won't be able to see till afterwards because you can't see me while we're doing this video, but I have a Mets hat here, 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 my Gary Carter jersey. I'm wearing a Mets hat. I told you, as soon as they got rid of the Wilpons, Steve Cohen took over and Lindor trade. I'm happy. I'm a happy Mets fan for the first time in a decade. And I'm also thrilled that, yes, we have six games in a playoff slate. I'm actually playing both slates and then one of the both days, one slate, just for the fun of it. Although there's not much as much to play on that one, but I'm playing a ton. I love having six games out here.
It's very fun for me. I'm actually going to dial down my exposure because it's two small slates. I'll play both slates, but golf is back. So I got a lot of money tied up in golf this week too. So
I know.
If golf is going well on like Saturday morning, I'll be like, oh, maybe I'll triple down on some NFL, see what's going. That's how I lose all my money every week on DraftKings. Either way, what's more encouraging about the Mets? Them getting rid of the Wilpons, bringing in Cohen, being able to get all these players, or Tim Anderkust not picking the Mets to go to the World Series for the first time in 5 years?
100%, Tim. They could still have the Wilpons and still have not made this trade and still not have money to spend in free agency, which hasn't even happened yet. Not free agency hasn't happened, but the money spending. All those things, all of those are still outweighed by the fact that Tim is off the Mets. That's all that matters.
He'll figure out a way to get himself back on the Mets if they get off to a hot start.
No, I will send him money. I will send him money to stay off the Mets.
People say this all the time. He refuses to take anyone's money to not curse people.
I don't know why. He could do a cameo just doing that, like, and make buku's dollars just doing that, saying, like, I uncurse your team.
I've told him, if you want to get a cameo from Pat Mayo, you just hit the description of this video and podcast. You can get in there. Very reasonable prices, too. I don't know why anyone would do it, but hey, I always respond to them. People, you know, leave 5-star reviews on it. They enjoy the cameos where I yell at their friends for them. Either way, running backs for this slate. Again, it's a 6-game slate. Jonathan Taylor is the most expensive of all the running backs. $7,900. It's a $2,000 gap. What's three?
Three games.
What did I say? Six teams on the 3-game slate. Yes, that makes more sense. Jonathan Taylor, $7,900, a $2,000 gap between him and Chris Carlson at $5,900. Gibson, Ronald Jones, Cam Akers, J.D. McKissick, Nyheim Hines, Zach Moss, and Leonard Fournette. Those are going to be your top nine. Carlos Hyde is $4,400. If we just want to talk top 10, that's usually what people do, talk top 10s, not top 9s. In a slate where it's going to be very concentrated ownership, especially at positions, is there a way that you can get away from Jonathan Taylor? Like, what's the case against him? That the Bills get up by too much and it becomes a Nyheim Hines game? Because if the Colts are going to keep this close, you're going to see tons of Jonathan Taylor in this game.
And that's your real only argument here, is that just gets away from him. Like, that's the thing, is they've been using more of him towards the end of the season. But even so, the only way you can paint a scenario where at 79 isn't even that bad of a price for how he's been playing, the only way to get away from Jonathan Taylor is if you stack the living hell out of the Bills passing game, which is fine. A lot of people are going to be doing that. But you do it and bring it back with Nyheim Hines instead. Or you just bring it back with T.Y. Hilton or the receivers only. And maybe you play that play. But yeah, Jonathan Taylor feels like, even if he is, I think that right now where I'm seeing some places might be thinking 40, 50% ownership. I
More. It's going to be more than that on this slate. Jonathan Taylor is going to be 75% out. I don't really care about ownership in a slate like this, to tell you the truth. Like, you're going to have, there's so few options that you're more than likely going to double up with someone else. Just try to put the best foot forward and play the best team. If you're going to get like tricky somewhere else, it's probably not the high end fade. It's probably finding the Isaiah McKenzie from week 17. Probably not going to be Isaiah McKenzie this week, although it could be if Cole Beasley ends up sitting here on Saturday. We'll see. But just trying to find that guy and getting it right, I think, is more important than be like, well, I'm going to fade a chalky Jonathan Taylor. You almost have to play him. Like, and you can play him because all of the other running backs just aren't expensive enough.
No, well, and that's the thing, too, is, and I hope that people aren't doing this. Maybe they don't listen to me, but I just think it's so easy to, for a combined 13,000, Jonathan Taylor and Cam Akers. Like, I don't get why Cam Akers is at 5,100. He didn't have a high ankle sprain. That's my only belief. You don't get 20 plus touches coming off a high ankle sprain. And that was really the case. Like, maybe a low ankle sprain. Maybe it wasn't severe. Like, whatever it is, that doesn't make sense. We've never seen that happen. So you give him that kind of work, even though it was a disappointing work on a per touch basis, you give him that kind of work coming off a quote unquote high ankle sprain. And he's only 5,100 with still no, you know, no other option beside what Malcolm Brown had 3 touches in that game on an injury. So at 5,100, I think the running back to me, for if you're playing Saturday, I don't know how you get away from Taylor and Cam Akers, and that's just, you're done. You're done. Run back, no questions.
The only way that you can end up getting away from them, if you quote unquote want to fade Jonathan Taylor, fade Cam Akers, it's not, I'm not playing Jonathan Taylor because, oh, I'm going to play Chris Carson because, you know, fewer people are going to use Chris Carson and I'll save the money. I don't think it's a situation like that this week. What you would want to do is what you had mentioned before. Instead of playing Jonathan Taylor, you play Zach Pascal, Michael Pittman, and T.Y. Hilton, two of those three, or Trey Burton, or whoever it is, you get your exposure to the Colts in just a completely different way, knowing that all four of those guys aren't going to break the slate for you, but three of them together, and hopefully it's not Jonathan Taylor who scores the touchdowns. It's not even saying don't play Taylor, play Hines, just play neither of them, or play Hines and T.Y., like you said. That would be the only way to get off of that play, not just completely fade that side of the ball, because it's really the only team that I think you can realistically look at and say, hey, I'm not going to play any players from this side, is Washington. I don't even believe that, because there are guys on Washington I do want to play.
Yeah, I don't think there's really much. I guess maybe if it's Wolford again. But again, I don't think Wolford's that big of a drop from Jared Goff or, you know, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. Cam Akers, even if you don't want the passing game. You know, the biggest thing, you know what, I don't like. I got to tell you, if you told me one team, like if you said, Pat, when he came to me and said, Jake, there's out of these 6 teams, you have to pick one. You're not allowed to use anybody. It would actually be the Seahawks. I'm not paying that for Chris Carson because Chris Carson's just not getting the full work, and he's not even really worth that price with the way that he's been playing. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are so boom or bust, and I know that's kind of an argument for a tournament, but Tyler Lockett had his first game in how long? DK Metcalf has been doing none of the – and it's because of Russell Wilson. It's because of this offense. It's because they're leaning on their defense and their run game that – for their prices, they're still not worth the risk that they seem to play when you have these other options. So like I said, it's not that I'm completely off the Seahawks. It's just, if you told me one team I wasn't allowed to, I'd rather use 2-3 guys on Washington than even touch the Seahawks right now.
That's really interesting. I hadn't really considered that, but that seems like it's going to be a very sluggish type game. It has the lowest projected point total at 42.5, the Bills and Colts being at 51, the Bucks and Washington being 44. And I think it really depends on how you think some of these games end up going. But Bills running backs, could you go there?
I'd say maybe if you hope that the Bills get out to a 30-point lead and then it's Zach Moss for a touchdown or maybe two, it would only be Zach Moss. And even then, I don't really want to get involved with him, mostly because, go back to it, with Zach Moss, 500 more, I'll find a way to get the Cam Akers. If I really want to, you know, go for a little bit of more touchdown upside, I'm going to chase more touchdown upside with Ronald Jones than I am with Zach Moss. So I've never really been that excited for Buffalo in DFS. You know, there was a couple of weeks where people asked if I have to play one in seasonal. It was Zach Moss. I told you, it was that Patriots week. I told you to go against the Patriots between the tackles. But outside of that, no Buffalo guys. I don't want the Washington guys, mostly because Gibson's not 100%. Tampa Bay destroys the run. They also destroy pass-catching running backs, and I don't think McKissick's going
to
even be used.
I was
going
to say that they don't destroy pass-catching running backs. They tend to give up a ton of receptions to pass-catching running backs. And that's
not that many.
I thought, what is it for the year?
Look at what they did. I think the highest receiving yards they've given up to a running back is like 40 or 50.
I mean, I would take
just looking at this.
I would take 40 or 50 from a receiving back if it's from J.D. McKissick. That's like 7 catches for him.
No, so like, let's see. They've given up 42 to Brian Hill and 30. You know, it's actually they haven't given up more than that 42. The previous high for that was 35 outside of week one, Kamara 51, week two, Mike Davis 8 for 74, and then everybody after that is the 42 or lower.
Well, I think that one of the Washington running backs is, if you do want to get contrarian and find a way to get access to lower ownership on the slate, it's either McKissick or Gibson. I know Gibson's not 100%, although it does look like he's going to play, that all of a sudden, if he just finds the end zone twice, which is not out of the realm of possibility based on the type of work that he gets, it's a horrible matchup, I agree with you, especially on the ground. That's why I was thinking in my mind, hey, let's go to J.D. McKissick here. They're probably going to try to run and not be very successful at it. Then they're going to have to come out and do all these short dink and dunks to J.D. McKissick. That's how their offense works most weeks anyway when Antonio Gibson can't get going. But if he can find the end zone twice, sure. Or you get one of those 5, 6, 7 catch games from McKissick, which I don't, it really depends on how this game looks. Like if Tampa jumps out 17-0 early, you're going to see a ton of McKissick in the receiving game. If it remains close the entire time, I can see Gibson getting his 20 touches. I don't know if they're going to be worth anything, but I do think that he's going to get volume.
Yeah, my biggest thing, and I chuckled, and I'm not trying to like come after you, but the two touchdowns, it's not happening. The only two people who have two touchdowns was McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara, and those were weeks 1 and 2. Nobody's done it since, and it's been 1-1-1-1-1 and what, 6 times? 6 other rushing touchdowns outside of, no, 5 other outside of those two. So I understand what you're saying. It just, for me, that feels like a 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000 chance that Gibson scores twice. That's all.
But let's say he only scores once. He could still end up as a top 2, top 3 running back on the slate if he does find the end zone once. Because I don't know how much we can really glean from last week when he played, when he was still very clearly hurt, that his role was really diminished versus what it had been before he actually sustained the injury.
That's certainly fair. And I'm also looking at the running backs that scored a touchdown against them, and it's Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara a second time, Dalvin Cook, David Montgomery, and Wayne Gallman, of all people. So maybe he's Wayne Gallman in that game. There you go. Wayne Gallman, 12 for 44 with a touchdown for 12.2 fantasy points. So there you go. That'd be top 3 or 4 guaranteed running back.
Well, I don't know about that even on this slate, because you're going to find someone who gets like a junky touchdown along the way. Well, just even to go back and look through their schedule, let's see here. Against the Falcons, they can't run the ball. The Lions, I mean, they were down the entire game. They're not going to be running the ball. The Falcons can't run the ball. Dalvin Cook has the touchdown. The Chiefs don't run the ball. The Rams one is the especially weird one, because the Rams were ahead in that game for a lot and were not able to do it. How did they end up breaking down in terms of running back distribution? They barely ran the ball in that game. They just basically said, fuck it.
5 for Akers, 3 for Brown, and 8 for Henderson. Henderson was 8 for 5 in that game.
And Kupp had 145 receiving yards. Woods had 130 receiving yards.
Well, and that's the thing. You said Atlanta can't run. That's Tampa Bay is... So the Atlanta defense was good against the run, and it was compounded by the fact they were so piss poor, terrible against the pass. Tampa Bay is great against the run, and they're also mediocre against the pass. So it's a similar effect with a little bit of different strength distribution. So the same thing holds here is if you're looking at it too, let's go through the entire season. I have it on my screen. You know how many people ran the ball more than 12 times against them? 3, Latavius Murray, Christian McCaffrey, and Dalvin Cook. That's it. So to go back to your argument, I guess when you look at it that way, if you're going to say 20 touches for Gibson, maybe one touchdown isn't the worst thing to try and hope for. It's looking at the schedule, because everybody passes against them, because they also get points put up against them because the Buccaneers score so easy, that you're also hoping for. Like, I think your play comes to make sense if you play Gibson in the Washington defense and you hope Washington gets after Brady, creates the narrative we know that Brady struggles under pressure, and you get a close 20-17 game where the Washington defense pays off and it comes back with Gibson.
Is there any cheap running back like below... Geez, who would be the lowest here? Like Henderson's on IR. Like Malcolm Brown and down. So $4,100 or $4,000 that you could envision playing. Because I just don't see anyone. Unless Gibson. And even I guess the cost is not even prohibited with it. Because like if Gibson was out, Peyton Barber would get a little bit more run. Now, he's absolutely terrible, but it's not like his $4,000. I mean, I'd rather play Fournette at 45, you know what I mean? I'd rather play Carlos Hyde for $400 more. And I don't like those guys.
I wouldn't even go down to Malcolm Brown, mostly because that use last week told me all I need to know about it, is that Cam Akers being hurt and still you barely touched the ball. It wasn't like 12 carries for Akers and two for Malcolm Brown. It was 20 something freaking carries and two or three for Malcolm Brown. So no, I'm not even going down to Malcolm Brown. Like, the person I would stop at is what you just mentioned, would probably be Fournette, and just hoping that, you know, Ronald Jones fumbles early and all of a sudden it's a Fournette game. And that's the dart throw. I wouldn't even do that, honestly.
Points per dollar, if we're talking about optimizers. And once again, if you want to go use the optimizer at ftndaily.com, get yourself code Mayo, get yourself a discount on all of that. These things really do come in handy this time of year. Do you know who the number one and two, I'll give this away, the number one and two values points per dollar at running back are this week?
I would say Cam Akers and Jonathan Taylor.
It's McKissick and Gibson together.
Really?
Yeah. Just because the pass catching prowess that they could potentially bring, their floors are very elevated. I'm looking at median projections. I'm not looking at ceiling projections.
Okay. That's certainly fair. Again, you know, the McKissick one, honestly, for me, I think that one, it just, for my opinion, makes the least sense. And I'm not saying like the optimizer is wrong or just we're sitting here talking about it. And the McKissick scenario is if this game gets away from him, they have to pass to catch up. But even then, with the way that Alex Smith and potentially getting replaced at times by Heinicke, because we don't know if he's 100% throughout the game, it's just McKissick hasn't even been seeing like a consistent volume, even when they've been down later in the year with Gibson. With and without Gibson has been a different effect here. So I don't even know that the Gibson, even if I say the Buccaneers score 30 plus, like, McKissick just doesn't still feel as good as the Nyheim Hines scenario that we're painting.
So for you, Taylor, Akers, maybe someone else in the flex if you want to go to. But those are the two you're going down with?
Hines or Ronald Jones. I would stick to those four running backs only.
All right, let's move to receiver. And when we think about stacking, we can kind of put quarterbacks into the same mix too. But what's the incentive to not use either the entire Bills passing game or the entire Bucks passing game?
I was laughing because I knew exactly where you were going with this. I don't know what the incentive is, because go back to Russell Wilson. It's a completely different team in the second half of the season. It's also the Rams, who have shut him down and shut them down consistently, not every single time. So again, maybe 1 out of 10 times it happens, it works for you. But Ramsey's been amazing. That secondary's been amazing. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, even if they do hit, can you really see Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, and DK Metcalf all hitting the same game? I can't see it. You're not playing Alex Smith. You're not screwing around with Goff and Wolford. So,
I don't necessarily hate Wolford, because he's $4,900. Really? Not that you need the savings this week, because it's a very soft week.
That's
in
why.
Pricing. The way that I would think about it is, based on what I saw from him last week, his rushing upside does present an interesting element where he could potentially score two rushing touchdowns. Not to say that he will or he'll score one, but, you know, 6 for 56, like, he's looking to take off. And the way that McVay is running this offense with him, if it is going to be him, is that they're getting him on the move early. And if he sees a running lane, he's going to take it. And I think, especially if Jamal Adams ends up sitting in this game, that there are going to be running lanes for him. Instead of trying to force it into coverage and potentially getting picked off, he's just going to put his head down and run. And that's very valuable as a standalone quarterback. You might not even have to pair him up with anyone, because the way his path to score and break the slate in fantasy points is actually rushing, not so much passing.
And so there's two things here. So one is, you remember last week's show, and I did it, and it actually paid off. I did the Mason Rudolph lineup for that reason. I did the Mason Rudolph because it cost nothing, and I brought it back with Deontay Johnson. And unfortunately, I did Claypool, as, you know, kind of thinking there we wouldn't see a ton of Juju Smith-Schuster. Yeah. Or wait, no, it was Claypool and James Washington is what it was. So Claypool hit, but Washington didn't, because I didn't think it was Deontay. Anyway, point being, the second part of what you said is why I really, it's not even if Wolford starts, why I'm kind of, because you don't need to. I guess you can if you want to throw out a lineup to what you're saying, and maybe it is the slate breaker because nobody's really using them. But the second part of what you said is you don't really need to is why I wouldn't really do it.
But at the same time, the fact that you don't need to do it means that people aren't going to do it. If you are trying to galaxy brain this three game slate, when I look down at the cheaper quarterbacks, because I mean, just put it out here: Allen, Brady, or Wilson. Pick one of those three. And frankly, it's probably not even Wilson. It's Allen or Brady. I prefer Josh Allen. You can afford him at $7,500 bucks. Just use Josh Allen. But if you want to play multiple lineups or try to get tricky, I prefer the upside of Wolford over Alex Smith for sure. And I think I could see a game where Rivers throws four touchdowns. I just don't think that's happening in the cold against the Bills.
And I would agree with you there. So again, but this might all be a moot point and it just ends up being Goff anyway.
Would you play Goff?
No,
just straight up. No,
he's no. Cause he's Jared Cook. He's, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a good or a bad opponent, shows up sometimes, doesn't show up other times because he has it in him. And just depending on what he feels like that day or whatever's going through his head, it's wildly unpredictable, I guess, if you really want to, but for that reason, you know, Woods is 62, Cup is 6,000. You stack them with Goff because that's the way you would play it. You would play Goff with both of them because you're not screwing around trying to figure out which tight end it's going to be. And most of the weeks, it's not even either one of them. So you play that and, you know, what are you bringing it back with? That's my question, is are you bringing it back with DK or Lockett? It just, it feels like it's so many, like, if this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, and these all these scenarios, which don't really often happen with the Rams and Seahawks in this kind of scenario. So I guess you could, but this would be like a 1 out of 50 lineup for me.
Weirdly, if it was Wolford, I think you could stack him with Cam Akers, especially with the way that everything broke down last week, where you just basically say, hey, I don't think they're going to pass for anything here. I think it's going to be all rushing. You hope that Wofford ends up getting in. But I mean, Cam Akers led that team in receiving last week.
Right, so it's like the second Taysom Hill game where it was Taysom and Kamara in the second one. That was right. That's the second one.
Yeah, and normally, I mean, the Millionaire Maker was one with Kirk Cousins and Alexander Mattison being played together in Week 17, and on a more condensed slate, I don't think you need to think about as much correlation as you normally would. You want to get it going. Like, if you play Russell Wilson, the move probably is to take one of Lockett or Metcalf and pair them with one of David Moore or Greg Olson's going to be Greg Olson's back, right?
I think he's back, but I don't, doesn't really
or matter. like one of David Moore or Olson or whoever, Walt Disley, Hollister, like just pick one of these jabronis and roll them out too. And just hopefully they're the one who catches the touchdown and then you're good.
Right. It's just, that's just so many like 1% chances of happening.
Yeah, but it's a lot different if you're playing a double up versus playing in the Millionaire Maker slate here too. Like a 1 in 1,000 chance is fucking fantastic considering you need a 1 in 117,000th chance to win.
The opportunity for that lineup to hit also, and that like you're just playing that as in nobody else has it. Kind of, it's not really like it makes that much sense.
It's not that nobody else has it, is you can afford a certain team with that. So you can play that lineup or a version of that lineup, and then you don't need to get tricky anywhere else. You can just play the guys that you expect to be really good, and then that can help differentiate your team just a little bit. And then you just need David Moore to catch a touchdown.
I have a version to that lineup.
Okay.
How about that?
Fair enough.
You like that wordplay?
Yeah, I do, actually. The biggest differentiator that you can make on this slate is finding the cheap receiver who hits. And I think that's where, if you do, instead of trying to find the running back like the Peyton Barbers of the world, or hope that it's a Fournette game over a Ronald Jones game, instead of trying to make that decision at receiver, can you go into the $3,000 range and accurately pluck someone from down there into your lineup who has the game that actually does separate the slate from everyone else? Do you have a lean on who that could be? Is it like, we don't know for sure that Cooper Kupp is going to play in this game. He should play in this game, but it's one thing about all these COVID guys is some guys seem to be relatively unaffected and other guys continue to have problems. I don't know how Cooper Kupp is actually doing. If it's not him, then you can think about a Reynolds or a Van Jefferson, but could it be Scotty Miller? Could it be Michael Pittman? Like, which one of these guys do you think you would go to?
So when you bring up Scotty Miller, if I'm going this route, I would not put it into the final game. If I'm going for the 3,000 guy hit, I'm going for your most, I would like it to be the first game. And if it's not, at worst, it'd be the second game, because that's how you kind of find out your leg up. If you're doing it in the final game, you're just kind of doing it to be a differentiator at that point. So for me, if I'm going to the first game, I think Cole Beasley or John Brown are both interesting. Cole Beasley obviously isn't the 3,000. Actually, what is he? 47 for Brown and 53 for, so those aren't 3,000 guys, but those could be some differentiators right there. But yeah, I am going to the 3,000. It would be Pascal, because the slot's a little bit more vulnerable for the Bills, and Pascal spends a lot more time in the slot than anybody else for this team. And then to your question for the second game, it would be Reynolds, even if Kupp plays, because to your point of what is Kupp going to be like coming back from this game, and Reynolds could still hit anyway, even if Kupp is out there the entire time. We saw towards the end of the season, as they did last year, that Kupp and Reynolds were mixing and matching coming off the field. And sometimes Reynolds was out there and Kupp wasn't even playing. So my choices would be Pascal and Reynolds, and, you know, maybe, you know, David Moore, but I don't want anybody really with the Seahawks. Those would be my two. And again, I would try to do it before the night game, because I want to do it knowing I hit it early, because that opens yourself up to more options later than making that your final option to make in the night.
That's a really well said point, that if you get your sleeper out of the way in the first game, or potentially even the second game, then you know what you actually have to do in the final game by utilizing the late swap on DraftKings. That if your sleeper hits early and you've differentiated yourself at running back, then you can say, hey, I actually have a leg up on everyone right now. I can go from Antonio Gibson on to Cam Akers, who's just a safer play, even if he is higher owned, because everyone is now trying to catch up to me. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Great. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So Pascal, I like Pascal, 37. Tampa receivers, do you have a lean on who you should? Because everyone's going to use Diggs, right?
I think that Diggs is going to be, would you think 60%?
I'd probably say more. And I would not. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs are going to be the two most commonly used players in all of these games, just because the Indianapolis defense, well, is perceived as good. It's not to the level where there's enough people out there, I think, that believe that Washington's defense is going to rattle Brady a little bit. That just it's an easier path to more points for Allen.
And that makes a lot of sense. So one of the first lineups I built, and I still have this one, you're asking about Tampa Bay. I would go Evans, and there's multiple reasons here. I like Gronk too. I know we're not talking about tight ends yet, but the utilizing the late swap scenario here is the reason I did this lineup, because this is what it makes a lot of sense. Is Mike Evans is actually my flex because of how I built this team, because I have Evans, Gronk, and the Bucs defense, because I think that Gronk and Evans probably going to be more chalk than the rest of the options, especially in this game, where if I get to the night game and all of a sudden I am behind, and these are chalk options as you expect with Mike Evans, if he's healthy, obviously the practice reports are going to play into that. But continue with the point. Mike Evans, Gronkowski, Buccaneers defense. Pretty chalky options. Get to the night game, I'm behind. Well, now I come back to what we talked about before. I switch. I go to Gibson. I go to Washington defense. And now I pay up maybe for McLaurin, or I swap another percent, you know, depending on what the roster my roster is. But that's where I switch to the Washington side, because they are priced high enough that I can still go back to Gibson and McLaurin, or maybe the, you know, whatever to say. So you understand what I'm saying with my point?
Yes, I do. Would you go to Gabriel Davis in the Bills game? Because he seems to be he got the cheap touchdown in week 17 from Barkley of all people. But whether John Brown plays or not, there does seem to be enough packages on the field where they go four wide, where he could be out there. He's only $4,000. With John Brown playing, I don't think the people are going to play him.
I don't know that. My concern is this: if Cole Beasley is back, is it Isaiah McKenzie or Gabriel Davis every single time they go four wide? And I think that Gabriel Davis seems to be the obvious one, especially for his usage so far. But now with Cole Beasley being out there, I would be more interested. Again, I'd be more interested in either one of them, to your four wide point, if Beasley remains out. If Beasley's back, I don't really know if I want to get involved. What are their opportunities going to be? Three targets? And yeah. I know the argument is, well, they hit the one and they get the touchdown, but that seems like such a desperation play for me.
See, on this sort of slate, that does not feel like a desperation play. That's almost a play that you need to make somewhere. And whether it's Gabriel Davis, whether it's Cam Sims or Zach Pascal, one of these guys, you have to pick your poison with one of them.
I don't think we have to, for what we've talked about. If this was, you know, if we weren't getting the pricing that we are, like, the pricing is balanced enough.
But it's not about the pricing, because the pricing is balanced enough. the chances of you having a duplicate team with someone else is so high on this sort of slate where it's very concentrated around two teams that everyone's going to go to.
And I understand that, and I understand the point behind it, but if you call me stupid to say it, but I just don't feel like, I feel like we're probably going to see a couple different tournaments where you end up where two or three teams end up splitting the top prize. And I'd rather split the top prize with two or three people than to finish 650th because I played as Isaiah McKenzie when I didn't need to. And that's where I'm going with it.
Well, like I told you, I lost a split of the showdown contest on the Saints-Vikings game because I decided to play Ty Conklin over Irv Smith, and I would have been in the split.
Right.
Instead, I won like $30 instead of $20K.
That's where I'm leaning. And I understand, I'm not saying your point is wrong, but that's where I'm leaning, and that's a perfect example. And sometimes it goes the opposite direction. If I would have played Conklin, what was the week before that? If you would have went Conklin instead of Irv Smith, it would probably went the other direction. So it kind of just depends on how it plays out. You can make an argument for both, I think.
Do you have any interest in the Washington receiving game? Like, is McLaurin
would be the only one.
McLaurin, so Cam Sims would just be off? He gets usage. He really does.
He does. But in this game, why are you going to try to talk me into Cam Sims?
I don't want to talk you into Cam Sims, but do we think that McLaurin's going to be 100%? No.
No, but even not 100% last week, he had a solid game. It wasn't great, but if he can do that with another full week of getting in limited practices and just getting healthier, he's probably still not 100%. But if I'm going to go down this road, I would like to get to McLaurin. I guess this is such a big price difference. See that, like I said, you're going to kind of half talk me into Cam Sims now because there's such a big gap between them and the price. If you're going to go for the problem is if I'm going to the 3000 range, I'm going to go back to my point that I said earlier is I've already played my $3,000 range in the early game or two. So I think that's why Cam Sims wasn't even in my mind at this point.
It's fair. I think John Brown is a guy I'm just going to go lock button on. I just don't feel like people are going to play him.
I don't know. I think it depends because in the fantasy community, he has such a loving following that I don't know. I can see this going. Here's one for you. Would you play two tight ends? Would you go Gronk and Thomas?
I think that you can. They're going to be by far the two highest owned, obviously. I think I would rather, if I was going to play two tight ends, that's where I would, because that's going to be a unique build anyway. That's probably where I would try to get a bit tricky and use one of the Colts tight ends if I could figure out which one that was going to be, whether it's Burton or Doyle. And then they need to go 3 for 40 with the touchdown, and I have a huge advantage on everyone else. And it is the early game.
I was pulling it up this. Give me a second to find out. Do you remember what the snap counts were for them last week? I feel like Doyle's moved back into the front, but I could be wrong about that.
I didn't even look at it, tell you the truth.
I'm going to check real quick to see, because that's the one thing is knowing who's out there running the routes the most between the three of them. Although I guess Trey Burton could run one in.
I mean, then let's see. But you also had like Higbee ended up with more receptions and yardage, but Everett was highly targeted in that game. Now that was without Cup from Walford, but I thought that was somewhat interesting.
That is interesting. So, yeah. So Doyle ran 13, Burton ran 9, Cox ran 4. Doyle was the only one to get targeted last week.
Hmm. That was a game where they were also leading most. They ran a bunch last week. That if they fall behind in this game, I'd be curious. That would be a very interesting splits tool to find it. I'm sure it exists out there somewhere. I just don't know about it. That, hey, let's look at snap counts when a team is trailing by 7 points. Who then?
What was the game? What was the week before that?
That was the Pittsburgh game, right? But that was also a game where they were leading most of the game.
I know. I'm trying to think. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to backtrack to where they were behind in my mind. So, they blew that game at the end. So that doesn't really help, does it?
No, that's the thing. Like
Tennessee was the last game. What week was that? Week 12. And watch, they probably weren't all on the field that week. So it's going to screw that up anyway.
Yeah,
got destroyed in that game.
I don't remember exactly who played and who didn't play for them that week.
Oh, they all did.
They all ended up playing. Yeah. All right, so let's go see here.
Allie Cox had 23 routes. Burton had 21. But that was Doyle's coming back game. He only had 9.
Yeah,
so there you go.
So it's going to be impossible to decipher.
Throw it out the window.
Perfect. Excellent news. That's just fantastic. Who have we seen as the best value? Gerald Everett actually projects out to be the best value here. Could you skip Is there any chance that you would skip on Diggs and try to use a lineup that was like Brown, Beasley, and Dawson Knox?
You had me until Dawson Knox.
I'm just trying to find, like, if it's not going, like, if you're not going to play Gronk or Logan Thomas, who is the third option on this slate that you could potentially play?
I would say one of the Rams, Higbee or Everett, as you mentioned.
I think I would go.
I mean,
with
I guess Dawson Knox, and you hope, and just you hope for the touchdown, but yeah, and Everett's $400 cheaper than Higbee is, so I would just go for the cheaper option on top of it anyway. You know what? If Greg Olsen wasn't back, I don't think Jacob Hollister would be the worst at 2,700, but to Greg Olsen being back screws that up.
How about Greg Olsen? There's your Seahawk.
could it be a Jack Olsen game? Jack Olsen, Greg Olsen game. Jack Doyle, God bless America.
Greg Olsen didn't play in week 17, or he just did nothing in week 17. He had one catch in week 16 against the Rams. Impressive stuff. 15 yards and everything.
So was he out there last week? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if he was out there or not. I was just looking at box score and he didn't pop up, but that doesn't mean that he didn't play. Now I have to go.
He could have been out there and just,
I don't know if they looked at it and said, you're healthy enough to play. We know you're coming back off injury. Why don't you just sit this one out?
Could be because he didn't even have a snap.
Yeah, then that would probably be the most likely case then. So he's probably going to play, but if not, quarterbacks very quickly. Like, if you're not going to like try to galaxy brain yourself, play Josh Allen or Tom Brady.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah. Unless you're, like you said, galaxy brain. I think that's the best way to put it. And if it's anybody, I didn't mind your Philip Rivers point.
I would still probably rather play John Wolford if he ends up starting for $4,900.
Sure. If Jared Goff is out there, you're Philip Rivers about throwing three or four touchdowns, and then you stack the T.Y. Hilton, Zach Pascal. Hopefully you get the right tight end. And then, or even, you know, screw the tight end. Go Nyheim Hines instead, and then that's your way if you wrote out the Jonathan Taylor game. There you go.
Yeah, and even if you, like I said about the points projected, like the over under in this game is 7 points higher than the next closest game, like you can still play all your Bills receivers that you want and still just run it instead of with Allen, run it with Rivers and play the, like you said, the T.Y. Hilton and the Zach Pascals, and just hopefully this is where all the points are at on Saturday. Because I mean I like Washington to beat Tampa Bay. I know that's not like a hot take by any means. They're 9-point dogs. I think the move would be, I wonder what it equals out to if I take the +9 and I take the under. No, it's still better just to bet the money line. The money line is +350 if I parlay, because if Washington covers this game, the under is most definitely hitting, right?
Oh, that's the, yeah, I think that's the only outcome is that if they cover, the under hits. My biggest concern is, how do you beat Tampa Bay? Well, they're not equipped to do so. Is I think you would beat Tampa Bay by scoring more. If they have the defense to keep them low, yes, get after Tom Brady. That's what you want. Create pressure. A bad Tom Brady game. My biggest concern is, what does the Washington offense do to win this game, is what I should have said. And that's where the problem comes into play, because it's not going to be through the quarterback. It's going to be through the run game. And that's what Tampa Bay shuts down, is the run game. So that's where my concern comes into Washington on the betting side of things. But you're right. If you are betting the under, or you're betting Washington to cover, you're betting the under as well. That just goes hand in hand.
I could just envision this game playing out a lot like the Tampa Bay at Chicago game, the Tampa Bay at Giants game. It's just nighttime game, a team that can generate a lot of pressure on Brady. Just maybe I think the Bucs are currently, not that they're a bad team by any means, they can definitely win the Super Bowl, but I think they're currently being overrated for beating the shit out of Atlanta twice and Detroit the past 3 weeks.
I'm actually looking at the weather right now to see. So
hopefully it's as cold as possible. Not that Brady can't play in the cold, obviously, but it affects
obviously
everything.
It's going to be 34.
Perfect.
And clear.
Perfect. I like it. So it's past Tom Brady's bedtime too, so it's tough.
He's got to go make sure he got kisses his kids on the lips before they go to bed.
That really bothers you, doesn't it?
It's just weird to me.
Well, you know, when you have kids,
it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. It's just weird to see.
All right. The other way that you can differentiate yourself on this slate is find the one defense that goes absolutely off and make sure you have them. Can I tell you who that is? I can't, actually. But
who would be your best bet? I think, is it not obviously the Buccaneers and the Bills are the two that have the highest upside to do that?
I would say no. I mean,
Washington?
I was going to say Washington or the Rams.
I don't think the Rams are going to get that much. I think Russell Wilson's too smart. If this ends up being a 17-9 game, it's just still, I don't think Russell Wilson's going to be doing enough to where that really pays off.
The Colts defense is interesting in the off the 1-10 chance that Josh Allen reverts back into being turnover prone Josh Allen, which he has not been this year, but maybe, you know, you ratchet
2018
up.
Josh Allen.
Or Josh Allen from the first round of the playoffs last year, where maybe the playoffs is just, you know, the pressure gets to him. He starts doing really stupid things.
I don't know. They were dancing out there today with, was it Too Legit to Quit or something like that? So I don't think he has any pressure this year.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on. They have
Stephon Diggs, huge difference in this team.
Josh Allen did try to, like, lateral the ball backwards for no reason in the playoff game last year. Remember that?
I do remember, but again, I think this is a completely different version of this team, and including Josh Allen. And I'm not saying that Stephon Diggs made it easier for him in every facet of the game, but it's a big difference when you bring somebody. It's what you and I talked about this offseason from a seasonal perspective, is they did the smart thing of what the Panthers did with Cam Newton towards the end of Cam Newton's Panthers career, is they said, oh, guess what? When you have somebody who has inaccuracy struggles, don't give them 6'5 dudes who can't move. Give them guys who can get open better than anybody else. And they did that, and they brought in Stephon Diggs. And with Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley, John Brown wasn't even really a factor most of this year. And you saw how great Josh Allen played. And a lot of it's his own credit, but a lot of it's what they did with the team around him.
All right. That will do it on the Pat Mayo Experience. Saturday slate on DraftKings for NFL Wild Card Weekend. Once again, if you want to get access to both day picks, all the expert picks, the optimizer, the projections, the ownership projections, go to ftndaily.com, use code Mayo, get yourself the discount. If you want to hear about the three game Sunday slate, stick on Mayo Media Network, subscribe and like the episode. Tell me your favorite sleeper in the comment section, because Jake and I will be back then. I'm Pat Mayo. I'll see you next time.
Pat Mayo Experience. Experience!